Welcome to the Clear Admit MBA Admissions Podcast. I'm Graham Richmond, and this is your wiretaps for Monday, May 17th, 2021. I'm joined by Alex Brown from Cornwall, England. Alex, how's it going? Is it raining in England today?
It's sunshine, Graham. I don't know why you think it might be raining. It's probably going to be raining tomorrow.
Okay, yeah, it's like pouring here in Paris. So I figured maybe, I figured it was a safe bet, but apparently not. All right. So how are things going, though, overall? You guys are, I guess things are better and better in the UK now, right?
Yeah, there is a little bit of a spike. There's a variant or a region area in the north that's a little bit concerning right now. So, I mean, that's the nature of this virus, right? I mean, you can't get complacent. So we are going through the next phase of lockdown next week, which is very good. Let's hope we continue on that path. But yeah, everybody, please stay safe. I know it's different parts of the world. It can be very different.
Yeah, it's crazy to see, just how things are evolving in the U.S. versus, France or India or Brazil. I mean, it's just crazy. There's really different levels everywhere. Alex, I have to ask you, I think most of our listeners don't know that you are a horseman. I mean, you love horses. You've written books about this.
We're not talking about Bob Baffert on this.
I was just gonna ask because there's this scandal in the horse racing world about the Kentucky Derby winner, and so. But it sounds like you don't like the guy that is the trainer of that horse.
Yeah, I can't say I don't like him. We're not mates, so we don't hang out.
Right.
I worked in horse racing on the East Coast. Baffert's a West Coast trainer mostly. And some of the horse welfare stuff I used to work on. Bob Baffert's not my favorite horseman, that's for sure. So it's ridiculous to me, frankly, that a horse can test positive out of the Kentucky Derby and still run in the Preakness. I think that just shows you the regulation in the industry is completely ridiculous. They've had this problem for a lot of years, and this podcast is about MBA admissions, so I'll just leave it at that.
All right. Yeah, and actually France has its own version of ridiculousness when it comes to drugs and sports, and that's known as the Tour de France with the biking. So it's, everyone's got their problems. So I did want to mention, we have a new sponsor for the podcast. They actually started sponsoring us last week, and I'm absolutely excited. It's Carnegie Mellon's Tepper School of Business. And so we're actually going to hear from them now, and then we'll get into our episode. Carnegie Mellon University's Tepper School of Business has the number one online MBA program according to US News and World Report. Why? Because Tepper MBAs are taught to thrive where data analytics, technology, and business intersect. At Tepper, students learn the latest analytic and management skills to not only lead but succeed in an increasingly complex business world. You'll learn from Carnegie Mellon's internationally renowned faculty in a vigorous curriculum and enjoy globally networked career and alumni support. Earn your MBA in one of three formats built to fit your lifestyle. There's never been a better time to earn your MBA. For more information, go to cmu.edu/Tepper. That's T-E-P-P-E-R. So what's been going on the MBA admissions front? So no more horse racing. we've got, wait lists, but I also noticed something happened last week with Harvard. Do you want to talk about that, Alex?
With Harvard? I don't even know what happened with Harvard last week.
Well, they released their essay, right? They announced,
So we're talking next season. So now the schools are starting to release their essays. And I believe Harvard is going with the same essay as last season. But we are hitting that time of year now where we're starting to hear about the application for next season. Soon enough, we'll start getting the deadlines for next season. So we're starting to move, the cycles are starting to move, right? So the early birds next season on the site's absolutely fantastic. Whilst we're still in the midst of round three decisions. That's what sort of threw me for a loop a little bit, Graham, because Harvard didn't have a round three other than their 2+2 program. And oddly enough, they released the decisions for that program very late. I was looking a couple of days ago, actually. So we're still seeing schools releasing decisions for round three. This upcoming this week, actually, some big schools are going to be releasing. Last week, Wharton was one of the biggest schools releasing decisions. But things are starting to move for next season.
Yeah, and I will say, I mean, I've seen, you know, we said this last week, but there's been movement on the wait list, and I've seen it at, you know, at Wharton. I will say I haven't seen too much with like HBS or Stanford yet, although I think there was at least one or two Stanford. So, you know, it trickles down. We'll see other schools making moves because that's when they're round three. Okay. Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see. And I would say my view is, yeah. Oh, right. Yeah. And my view is that I would not give up. If you're on a wait list, don't give up yet. I mean, wait until the round, you know, the sort of the final deadlines for obviously admissions decisions on round three, but also deposits, because that's usually the last flurry of big activity. So we'll see. And yeah, the other thing I would just remind listeners is that we try to track when schools release essay topics or deadlines and when their applications go live. And we post on the site. So just stay tuned. You know, there's a great series of posts that we have up every year that are called essay topic analyses. Some of our veteran listeners know about those, but that's where we take the school's essay questions and break them down and give advice on why we think the school's asking, what they're looking for, and how you might go about beginning the process of writing. So stay tuned for that. That's one of the more, those pages are some of the more popular pages on clearadmit.com. We are, Alex, still running our survey. I think there's like a week left or so where we're still looking for admitted students to fill out a survey. Just go to bit.ly/MBA admit survey and you can fill out a survey. It takes like 10 minutes and we're giving out Amazon cards to those who take the survey. So it's worth it. And I'll put the link again in the episode description so that everyone can jump over and take that. It really does help us to gather this information about the way applicants make decisions. We share it with schools. It's obviously all anonymized, but it's really useful data to have on the whole process. On the website, Alex, we continue to run out the real humans, and we had Johnson & Johnson, a woman who works at Johnson & Johnson and is an HBS grad from 17, and she's doing really cool stuff in their like robotics division. And then we also had a Kellogg grad who works at Daily Harvest, which I didn't know what that was until I read the article, but it's a superfoods to your door kind of service. So for people who want to eat healthy. And then the last thing, Alex, I was going to mention is that we have videos up of all the events that we've been doing over the last 3 weeks. So we have a video recap. You can literally watch the webinars that we conducted. So there's one with Wharton, Columbia, Ross, Berkeley, and UT Austin. And then there's another video with the panel that we ran with Duke, Cornell, Tuck, UNC, and Yale. And finally, we did that recruiter event. All those videos are up. The recruiter event was with Bain and JP Morgan, if you want to learn more about careers in banking and consulting. So I definitely encourage people to check those out. I know, Alex, you were asking me before we went on air how that stuff went. I think it's been a lot of fun. The schools seem to have enjoyed themselves, and I think the candidates got a lot out of it. So a lot of fun.
Well, not to put you on the spot, Graham, but as a veteran of the industry, out of those three webinars, pick out two things that you learned that perhaps you weren't aware of beforehand. That would be quite interesting for the listeners, I think.
Yeah, I think, one thing that came out of I think it was the first admissions overview webinar we did with Wharton and Columbia and some other schools. And this idea that, like, they basically said, look, no application's perfect. And that they know that you're human, that everyone's got their, you know, warts or whatever, and that they're reading to admit. You know, that they're not, it's not like they're trying to sort of look for reasons to reject you. They're looking for reasons to admit you. I thought that was a nice way to kind of frame it. And then I guess on the recruiting side, I was thrilled that both JP Morgan and Bain emphasized the idea that, like, you don't need to start recruiting now. You know, you can relax and get off to business school and enjoy yourself. But that when you get to business school, you would be so much the better if you knew what you want to do in terms of recruiting and post-MBA. So the analogy they shared was like, look, you can't really effectively recruit for banking and consulting at the same time. And the reason I was happy to hear them say that is because it's something that you and I have both said. I think you've really championed this, even in the book that we wrote. I think you'll get so much more out of an MBA if you arrive with the makings of a plan in terms of your career. So I don't know if you agree still, but that was something that you would put into the book that about admissions that we have available on the site.
Yeah, I mean, to this second point, I couldn't agree more in terms of if you're going to an MBA, and obviously our experience is related to Wharton, but you know, there's so much opportunity when you get to the business school. If you don't know why you're there in the first place, you're going to spread yourself too thin. So it's good to see the recruiters acknowledge the importance of that up front, and so forth. This whole idea of we're seeking how to admit folks versus how to deny folks, I find that quite interesting. So I've heard that language over the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. Especially out of Wharton. Frankly, when I was at Wharton, Graham, I was looking to figure out how to deny someone simply because we were overwhelmed with great candidates. So yeah. I'm quite interested to see how that shift has occurred, because I know they still get lots and lots of great candidates. So
yeah,
anyway, I just wonder about that sentiment, frankly. But yeah. But there we go. It's a great marketing sentiment.
Yes,
sure.
I agree with that. And what's interesting is that in the second application webinar, I think it was Pat Garrison from Tuck who also said, you know, you'll be better if you show up here knowing kind of what you want in terms of a career, because otherwise it's like you're drinking from the fire hose and you can't.
Yeah,
you can't figure it out. There's so much going on. So that was echoed. I think that's really good advice. And I think, yeah, this read to admit thing, it is a nice sentiment. It sounds good. But I think from the applicant side, it is nice to know that the committee recognizes that you're not going to have a flawless profile. I mean, even at the top schools, like people have weaknesses, and that's okay. Right. I mean, yeah.
And quite honestly, I understand that sentiment in the perspective that actually it's refreshing for an admissions reader to read a profile or a candidate or whatever who's being very honest and transparent about their stuff.
Yeah.
And that is refreshing. But it is still necessary to show why you're going to be a great candidate, despite whatever the flaws that maybe are. So you want to be very sort of upfront about potential flaws and drawbacks, and very honest about them, but also make sure that they're not going to create any lingering doubt in the minds of the ADCOM. So how do you address those particular issues?
Yeah.
I really do like the sentiment. I just wonder how it works in practice. The idea, though, should be, as a candidate, be as very straightforward, honest, and upfront as you can about who you are, but then show the ADCOM why you're going to be a terrific student for sure.
Yeah, agreed. And I would say that's actually a good segue, because if people want to talk about their stuff or their, you know, their weaknesses or, you know, whatever it is that they're curious about, we're going to be on Clubhouse again later today, Monday at noon Eastern. Last week was awesome, Alex. We had a pretty big crowd and a lot of people came up on stage and, you know, took the podium to ask us questions about admissions. And several were regular listeners of the podcast, which was fun to hear. I think everyone was there were a couple that were weirded out by the ability to actually jump in and ask questions instead of listening in a one-way fashion. So that was cool. We'll be back today at noon Eastern. So tune into that. Alex, we did get another review of the podcast. We got a person who gave us 5 stars and says, I'm working my way through all the older episodes. Keep up the good work, Alex and Graham. And that came from Apple Podcasts in Thailand. So that's a listener far, far away. Very cool to know that people are listening in all corners of the earth. And if you have questions for us, you can always email us at info@clearadmit.com. Just use the subject line wiretaps and Alex and I will get to your questions. Alex,
I have a quick,
go ahead.
A quick question, Greg. How many episodes of Wiretaps have we run?
It's
approximately.
Yeah, it's funny that you should ask. So the podcast itself has, you know, I don't know, 160 or whatever number of episodes. But Wiretaps is a feature within the podcast that we started after the podcast was already born. And this is the 97th episode of Wiretaps. So we are coming up on a big round number. And I was thinking about whether we should do something special for that. I got to brainstorm and see if, I don't know, if any former Wiretaps featured candidates want to come on or talk with us about how bad our advice was or it maybe how good it was. We'll see. we should do something for the number 100. That would be fun.
Any idea how many listens we have?
I don't have that in front of me, but it's tens and tens of thousands of listens. I mean, I think we're...
Nice.
Yeah, no, there are a lot of people listening. I think it's actually... I want to maybe even say hundreds of thousands now, because we've been doing this a while, and I haven't looked at that number recently, but it's up there.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So let's get into this week's candidates. You've picked out two ApplyWire candidates and one DecisionWire. So unless you have anything further, let's move on.
No, let's kick on.
All right, so this is Wiretap's candidate number one. So this is, as I said, an ApplyWire entry. The candidate has seven target schools. They are Cornell, Georgetown, Michigan, Kellogg, NYU, Chicago, and UVA. And the candidate wants to start in the fall of 2022. They've been working pre-MBA in banking and tech. And post-MBA, they're hoping to get into tech, or I guess stay in tech, and maybe do investment banking. And they have a kind of scattered list of companies because of that. So they have like Citibank, but they also have Google on the list, right? So there's a few tech companies and a bank. GPA is a 71%. I presume they're not on the US system, so that's a little bit of a different thing. I think they did their studies in Australia, if memory serves. They have 4 years of work experience. They're currently located in Malaysia. So I believe this candidate is Malaysian and went to undergrad in Australia. They, I think, spent a few years in M&A and then more recently joined a tech kind of more of a startup environment. And they think the GPA translates to a 3.3 on the kind of US scale. And they feel like their early part of their, you know, studies suffered a bit. They had some family issues. They were flying back and forth from Australia to Malaysia to visit an ill parent. So there were a lot of things going on that may have impacted that. But I wanted to, you know, they still need to take a test. They did a kind of GRE test and got a 315, but that was just a mock test. So they're getting ready. But the big thing I wanted to talk about with this candidate, Alex, and get your take on is they actually applied this year in the third round to Michigan and Cornell, and they did not get in. They were granted a test waiver, I think, for both programs, but didn't make the cut after that. So what do you make of this candidacy? Because they were asking about, okay, do I apply in round one next year? And if so, what impact does the fact that I just applied in round three have, et cetera?
Yeah, I mean, quite honestly, let's be frank here. This candidate applied in round three with a test waiver. That's not going to go down particularly well in the grand scheme of things. This season it was going to be very difficult. If you're applying in round three, everything really needs to be top draw, I think, to really have a competitive chance. So having to waive the test and so forth, that's already sort of a bit of a strike against. Obviously, a school is going to grant you a test waiver if they grant test waivers, because they do that just carte blanche if they do that, right? It's not like you qualified for a test waiver in any respect, I don't think, anyway. And their GPA, they say, is okay, it's decent, but it's not at average, and there was some family issues they had to deal with at the time, so there's obviously context around that. But again, it just makes the challenge even more insurmountable applying in round three, I think. So I'm going to make a couple of assumptions about this candidate. One is that their current work experience is very good, as well as their outside of work activities. They seem to be quite well involved. They're doing interesting things. In terms of their work experience, they started in banking. They switched to tech. But it was corporate banking and then tech, I think. That's my understanding of it. What they want to do, which I find completely bizarre, is go into investment banking. Because who wants to do that, right, going into like hundreds of hours a week of work or whatever it might be? I was kind of reading this profile thinking, are we back in the 1980s or something? But some people do want to go into investment banking. That's perfectly very good. So I'm joking a little bit here. But in my mind, there's what's to like here is that recent work experience, their outside of work activities, they're definitely a performer and so forth. They need to get the test score undertaken. And they need to show that that test score is competitive to the schools that are applying. They need to apply in round one because they might be bucketed with the sort of overrepresented group of candidates. They might not be, but in terms of mitigating that risk, applying in round one will never hurt them. They're already thinking about this stuff, so they should, their target schools, they should be looking at applying in round one, even more so as a reapplicant. And as a reapplicant, waiting that additional time to show progress or whatever in their career or whatever it might be, I think can backfire, right? If you think you're going to wait a while and apply in round two, get your stuff ready and apply in round one. Another question this candidate had, Graham, was, can I reuse some content if there's no change? And the example that they gave for that was a video. They particularly liked a video that they submitted maybe for Johnson or whatever. And I would say, yeah, the content might be good. Maybe it needs tweaking a little bit, but certainly don't reuse what you've presented. You're going to have to re-record it. In the least, in terms of rewriting essays, re-recording video and so on and so forth. Anyway, these were some of my quick thoughts for this candidate, Graham.
Yeah, I think so. A couple of things from my side. Number one, I get the investment banking thing. I mean, I think, you know, actually, I read recently this is like one of the biggest years for investment banks, you know, in a while. So it's kind of a, you know, sort of heating up. And so I could see someone wanting to do that. Although, you know, in terms of the career trajectory, it was a little, you know, they already did sort of M&A stuff and then they, you know, move into tech. And so I'm wondering if it would make more sense from a just career, like sort of feasibility and like, or just what like makes logical sense for them to continue on in that sort of tech domain. But either way, I think one of the things that I thought was interesting is they wondered if as a Malaysian, are they going to fall into that overrepresented bucket? And I would say, yes and no. You know, I think there aren't a ton of Malaysians applying the way that there might be Indian candidates or, you know, Chinese candidates or something, but they could fall into overrepresented territory. I guess if this candidate is male, I think that's more likely than if they were, say, female. So that was on my mind. The other thing is the candidate did leave a really nice note that I forgot to mention. They said, "Hi, Alex and Graham. I want to express how much I enjoy listening to the podcast. It has become part of my Monday evening routine while cooking dinner." So Alex, I don't know if you remember this, but we now have people cooking, driving, running, and sleeping, I think, to the podcast. Yeah. In terms of reviews we've gotten. But I mean, back to the point here, this candidate, I agree, they got to apply early and they probably need to polish up the file. You know, it's hard for me to know whether, like, did they not get in because they were late and didn't have a test and the GPA doesn't jump off the page? Or did they not get in because maybe their career plan didn't resonate or their essays or this video that they think is great maybe isn't as great, right? So it's hard to know. But I think you always want to refresh your materials when you're a reapplicant, I mean, to an extent. Like if you just dump in the same material second time round, it's almost like as an admissions reader, I remember being like, why is this person back again if nothing's really changed? I know it's a different round, but you know, show some effort, like do something to let me know that you're really passionate about coming. So, yeah.
Yeah. And even, and this is a point that I said to this candidate, your perspective evolves, even if your career hasn't shifted and you're no more active in your community. So the core aspects of your candidacy are the same. Over the course of the 6 months, having been in the application process, your perspective evolves and changes and so on and so forth. Yeah. So that can be fodder for additional material. So you know more about your goals, you know more about your trajectory, you know more about why Johnson is a great fit for you, especially, again, if investment banking is the pathway. You could be more firm about that now, and that would make perfect sense for a program like Johnson and Ross and so forth. So yeah, there's going to be a shift in perspective, if not a shift in other more sort of harder aspects of the application. And obviously, this candidate needs to take the standardized test and ace it. I just think round three, waiving the test, is definitely putting yourself at a massive, massive disadvantage. Round one with a great test score makes the prospects very different.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. I mean, unless you're kind of a completely sought after candidate that has the most unique profile ever, you probably don't have a lot of leeway in round three, right? So yeah, so I would say get to work on the test. That's probably the number one task for this candidate, and then use the summer to refine all the materials and get apps in the first round. I still am optimistic about this candidate's chances going to a, you know, top school like the ones they've got on their list. I just think they need to, yeah, they got to sit the GRE and they need to get above 320 for sure. So That's my take.
Yeah. Best of luck to them. Yeah, I mean, hopefully they do very well. I just think they were really up against it this season with their strategy.
Yeah, it's hard. It's really hard in round three. And I would say when they get in round one next year, they can mail us dinner since they seem to like cooking while listening. So maybe some really good Malaysian food. I'm all for that if that's possible. So
that would be wonderful.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number two. So this candidate has a whopping 17 schools on the target list for fall of 22. I'm not even going to read them all, but it's basically a who's who of the sort of top 20 business schools. They've been working in New York City in boutique consulting kind of slash tech consulting. And after business school, they want to actually continue to do consulting, but they'd like to move into more of a generalist shop, whether that's Accenture, Bain, Booz Allen, BCG, Deloitte, KPMG, McKinsey. They have a whole bunch on their list. This candidate has a GPA of 2.97, and they have 4 years of work experience. They have not yet taken the GMAT, but they've been scoring in the kind of 680, 690 on some initial practice tests, and they know that they got to get above 700, so let's assume that that's where they're headed. They want to, as I said, they're in New York now, and they want to land either in New York, or they seem to have a Texas interest. They have Dallas and Austin as destinations, or Washington, D.C. So that's kind of the basics. They did say, again, another nice compliment. They said, I want to start off by saying that I love the podcast. I listen to it while working in the shower, and it has, I don't really understand, are they working and in the shower at the same time, or is it, no, it's like either working or in the shower, I'm guessing. And it says, giving me the knowledge boost that I need to start thinking about pursuing my MBA. So thanks for those comments. They also mentioned that they're first generation female Asian American, and again, looking to apply for fall. So now, Alex, I guess just to add to the list, we've got cooking and showering. So there you go. People doing all kinds of stuff to the podcast. We'll probably leave it at that. But what do you make of this candidate, and how is she going to do at sort of top schools, given, you know, there's some question marks, like with the GPA in particular?
Yeah, I wouldn't cook in the shower, that's for sure. I reckon, Graham, if this candidate had a 3.8 GPA rather than a 2.97 GPA, should be targeting just the top schools, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's clearly the GPA that is the Achilles heel, and this candidate knows that. There's absolutely no if and or buts. I really do like other aspects of this profile. I love the idea that she's a first generation, she mentors, she gives back because of issues she faced as a first generation candidate, and so on and so forth. I think she's a bit of a striver too. I think she's sort of really pushed and quite likely is doing very well in the consulting firm work that she's currently doing. Obviously, that needs to be backed up by strong recs to back all that stuff up. But, you know, like you say, she's got a lot of schools on her target list, and I think that's a symptom of a candidate that's a little nervous that they need to spread their risk because they have this big Achilles heel of the GPA. So the question becomes, can she overcome the 2.97 GPA? And I think the answer is that yes, she can. She needs to certainly do well on the standardized tests. So she's taken two practice tests, got a 680 or a 690. She knows she needs to get that 700 plus. I would try to encourage her to take the standardized test pretty soon, see where she lands with the idea that she's going to retake the test to really push that score up. So recognize that, you know, lots of candidates take the standardized test on multiple occasions to get their top score. I also wonder, Graham, if she would be well served by then enrolling in MBA Math or HBS Core or some supplemental program that she shows two things by doing that, right? One is that she again has that self-awareness to recognize she's got to do everything that she can to show that she's going to do well academically, as well as, you know, just simply this is another step for preparation for beginning the MBA journey herself. So I think that if she does that, she gets a great test score, executes well on her applications, I think she can do very well, Graham. I mean, I don't know that she can hit the very elite of the M7 programs, but nevertheless, there's definitely going to be some schools that would take the risk on the GPA as long as she covers the other aspects, as well as shows that she's got a lot of really interesting aspects to this candidacy, Graham.
Yeah, and we didn't get into all the details, but, you know, it seems like the work experience has actually been very strong, lots of rewards and, you know, just pretty impressive stuff. And then even undergraduate sort of outside activities and current, you know, community service and stuff, it's all really strong. So as you say, it's this GPA issue. I'd like to think that if she buckles down and works really hard, that the GMAT score will come. I think getting a really good GMAT score could completely change, you know, the sort of way things look. I think an optional essay is definitely in order here to explain. She actually mentioned there was a traumatic event happened in sophomore year that derailed academic performance, but that the trend in the final semesters is really upwards. So that's good. I mean, I think she's going to have to explain, you know, what went on and showcase that, you know, those better grades late in her academic career, but nothing like a great GMAT sort of silenced the potential concerns. And I think, yeah, maybe HBS core would be smart too as a way to bolster. What we don't know is where did she go to undergrad? Mm. What caliber of institution was it? And what was the major? Because that might color the way that I think about what she needs to do to address the GPA issue. You know, so like if the major was at an unknown, unknown state school in basket weaving or something, then that means one thing, right? Whereas if she went to like MIT and studied, you know, engineering, then that's another, right? So we need to know that to really properly counsel her. But yeah, I think I personally think this person will end up at a top 15 type school if she can get the GMAT score where it needs to go. And can kind of write a nice optional essay explaining, you know, the GPA situation, because it really does seem like that's the only issue in the file. Everything else kind of lines up. She's got all the boxes you'd want to tick. So I'm optimistic, and I wish her well, and I really appreciate her listening to the show and leaving such nice comments. But yeah, so I feel optimistic, Alex.
And as a classmate, you'd want to sit down and hang out with this candidate. Again, she seems like she's done some interesting things.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from, you know, I guess she was like running her sorority. She did Toastmasters. I mean, she's just done a lot of different stuff that suggests she's outgoing, active, you know, someone who gets involved in the community that they're a part of. So, yeah. So again, yeah.
Yeah.
So best of luck to her. Thanks for that post. Let's move on and talk about Wiretap's candidate number 3. So this is a Decision Wire entry from a candidate who is going to be going to business school this fall. And they applied to UT Austin, Vanderbilt, Georgia Tech, and Georgetown. They ended up getting offers at Georgetown. The Georgetown offer came with a $20,000 scholarship. They also got into Georgia Tech, and it seems like they don't indicate exactly here, but it seems like there is some scholarship there too, likely in the form of about 10 grand a year. And then with Vanderbilt, they were admitted as well, and they got a $92,000 scholarship. So they ran the table and got scholarships from all schools except for UT Austin, which it seems like didn't work out for them. They mentioned they are torn between Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt Owen. And so I guess Georgetown has been crossed off the list. They have been working in... they want to work in consulting, excuse me. And they mention a lot of the usual suspects there: Accenture, A.T. Kearney, Bain, Deloitte, McKinsey, PwC. They also have maybe a chance of wanting to work in tech. So they listed Twitter as a company too. So what do you make of this, Alex? Because it's not every day that we see, these are schools we don't talk as much about on the podcast. And I think that's why you've maybe picked this one. But also it's an interesting, you know, that they have a lot of... there's some background here that maybe you'll share as you kind of analyze this candidate. But it's an interesting juggle, because I think some people would say, wait, how did Georgetown come off that list? They might be the highest ranked school that you got into, right? So how do you, yeah, what do you make of this candidate?
Yeah, I mean, that would be my first point. On the surface, you look at McDonough, Georgetown, Georgia Tech, and Vanderbilt. If you're going to cross one school off the list, you wouldn't have presumed it would have been McDonough. But this candidate was pretty explicit. They don't want to work on the East Coast post-MBA. So given that, yeah, and given the proximity, East Coast, Georgetown, Washington, D.C., and so forth, that eliminates Georgetown from the calculus. And you know, this is a good example of, you know, where each candidate has their own personal preferences and fit issues and so on and so forth that need to dial in the equation. You don't just look at rankings or different tiers as we generally qualify them as. So we would have said on the surface that Georgetown is in a higher tier than Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt Owen, and probably Georgia Tech and Vanderbilt Owen are in the same tier. And as you go down tiers, those tiers tend to get a bit more broad. They're less well-defined as such. Hopefully that makes sense to our listeners. So if you're looking at and comparing Vanderbilt and Georgia Tech, it seems to me the balance here is Vanderbilt, which is in Nashville, which I need to correct myself because I said New Orleans when we were chatting about it beforehand, but that's obviously Tulane. In Nashville versus being in Atlanta, the idea being that Atlanta's a larger sort of metro area, so there might be more career opportunities in the proximity of Georgia Tech than Vanderbilt. So that sort of puts the balance on the side of Georgia Tech. But this candidate's partner is in Nashville, right? So the more personal fit would be Nashville. And they're getting a better offer from Vanderbilt Owen. So you've got more money. That's where your partner is. It's Nashville versus Atlanta. Graham, I vote for Nashville.
Yeah, this is, I mean, it's an interesting quandary, but I do think at the end of the day, I mean, all three of these schools are somewhat similarly ranked. I think we give an edge to Georgetown, right? But it's, you know, these are all sort of like top 25 MBA programs in my view. And it's, I think when it comes down to it, it's probably a little bit of fit and a little bit of the dollars awarded. And then the last thing I would say is, fit not just in terms of like where do you want to work after business school and where is your partner going to be living, but also what's the candidate's interaction been like with potential classmates? And they did mention that, I'm going to now freeze up here and not be able to find it, but I think, yeah, they said, I do really like everyone that I met at Owen and it feels like home already.
Yeah.
So when I read that, I was sort of like, they're giving you $90,000+. It's a great school. It's in Nashville where your partner lives. And, you know, if you want to go and work in Atlanta after business school, you can do that from Vanderbilt. I mean, Vanderbilt's a nice brand name. I mean, the undergraduate institution, the university as a whole is like really well known. Like it's not it's not like you won't be able to go work anywhere, particularly in the Southeast. So I feel like it opens doors for them and that's probably where they should go. For some reason, though, they do seem, you know, people talked a lot about, well, Atlanta's a much larger metro area. There might be more work opportunities there. And, you know, a lot of the top consulting firms have offices and things. But I still just feel like, I mean, Nashville's sort of a bit more of an up-and-coming city, a little smaller. The fact that they have their partner in Nashville makes me think, why would you do that 4-hour commute? And it's not just because, you know, you want to live with your partner, but also think about the fact that when you're doing that commute, you're missing out on what's happening on campus. So
Right. You
could actually do more in your MBA program if you happen to be near your partner, because, you know, you're not going to lose 4 hours getting back and forth all the time. So yeah, I felt like Vanderbilt was the right call here. But again, it's a personal decision for them. And I don't know their financial situation either and that sort of thing. But yeah, I was landing on that side, which is, there was a lot of debate on the site on this post. And I don't think a clear conclusion was was drawn, but that's where I'm landing too.
Very good. I think we're going to vote for Nashville. Better music in that city anyway.
Yeah. All right. So we've done it again. Three candidates profiled, hopefully a handful of lessons learned for all listeners as they navigate this process and begin thinking about their own applications. Alex, thanks so much for picking these out. We'll be back in 1 week's time. I did want to ask everyone to please tell anyone you know who you think is applying to business school or has an interest in management education to give this podcast a listen. The more, the merrier. So thanks, everyone, once again, and we'll be back in 1 week. And thanks, Alex.
Thanks, everyone. Stay safe. Good luck.